You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
Didn't Colby tell a story about Crosby's jock?
Oh, it's legendary. He used the same jock going back to when he played Rimouski in the QMJHL. Let me circle back to your point about Shanahan.
I just want to say I've never really looked at it. I would like that to be on the record. Thank you.
Okay, Elliot, Dom told me I've got to use the word eclipse early in the podcast. Let's see how we do.
Don't look at the eclipse. How's that?
Don't look at the podcast. 32 Thoughts, presented, as always, by the GMC Sierra Elevation, Merrick Friedman, and Dom Shramati, who said, you better use the word eclipse early in today's podcast. So let's lead with this one. Yegor Sharangovich has eclipsed the record for most goals scored in a season by a Belarusian player. Sorry to my neighbor Mikhail Grabowski, who held the record at 29 when he played with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yegor Sharangovich last night scoring goal number 30. Elliot Friedman, of course, he went over to the Calgary Flames in a trade for Tyler Toffoli from the New Jersey Devils. And now, even though Grabo still has the record for most points all time by a Belarusian in the NHL, Sharangovich is sixth. Sharangovich does have the record for most goals in a season by a Belarusian player. Do you have a thought on that one? And did I pass the test, Dom?
That was pretty good. I wasn't expecting that. So Grabowski's at 296 career points.
Correct. Now, he's good buddies with Sharangovich. I've told you before, like, they're pals. And he told me in the offseason, we were at a rink together, and he's like, that's a good trade for Calgary, man. And I'm like, well, we'll see. You know, he looked okay. And he goes, no. This guy's going to be good. Watch. You're going to see this guy does really good in Calgary. You know what? Grabo was right. And then he took Grabo's record. So congratulations, Yegor Sharangovich. Sticking to Grabo.
Sharangovich, by the way, is at 162. Which
all-time
means
points.
If he has another couple years like this one, he's about 2.5 years away from breaking Grabowski's record.
Hearing footsteps, Grabo? Are you hearing footsteps, Grabo?
Will you, by the way, look at the eclipse? Did you buy special glasses or anything like that?
No, I'll be getting off the air today right around the time that it starts. So I haven't made any plans for the eclipse, honestly, Elliot. Have you? Did you buy glasses?
No,
Did you buy the phony glasses? Oh, no, you'll be in the air.
I'll be in the air. I'm flying to Vancouver. Wednesday night is the annual Canucks for Kids Fund Telethon. There is no good reason for this, Jeff, but they have invited me back again this year to co-host it with Randeep Janda. Nice. I am honored and flattered that for whatever reason, they continue to ask me to do this. I poke fun at the Canucks all the time and some of their social media, but their generosity is second to none when it comes to donating for this. Canucks for Kids is an incredible charity. They do a fantastic job. So unless they're flying me into the eclipse, I won't be looking at it. But I'm here to perform a public service. If you purchased Eclipse glasses on Amazon and you didn't see this story, Amazon has warned people that some of the glasses sold on its site were frauds. They were fraudulent glasses. So make sure you know what you're doing. And shout out to the Kitchener Rangers and the Erie Otters in the OHL playoffs, who had to delay games 6 and 7 because Erie is right in the line of the eclipse. And there were so many people who wanted to see it that there were no hotel rooms available at time. They had to delay the series.
Yes. Like if you look at all the hotel, like there's a wonderful graphic of all the hotel bookings sort of right in line with the eclipse, and it's staggering. Have you seen these graphics of all the hotel? There's like this one, there's this one strip down North America where the eclipse is most visible, and it's incredible how many rooms have been booked.
I don't know where I saw it, but I saw it somewhere that Erie has 100,000 people and there's 200,000 people coming to watch the eclipse. So I'm assuming every single one of those is a couple, and maybe some thruples.
Oh.
Because people are more adventurous these days.
Oh my.
Live your life as you wish, as long as you don't hurt anybody.
Not here to judge.
And the Rangers and the Erie Otters with the series right now at 3-2 Kitchener.
Mm-hmm.
Game 6, Tuesday.
Okay. Excellent PSA, and we will move off the...
Enjoy the eclipse for those of you who partake.
Okay, very good. You know... It was only a couple of days ago we were talking about this, but here we are again. The race for the final wild card spot in the East and the race for third place.
Keep ripping me about the expanded playoffs, people. I see it. I get direct texts.
Yeah, no, I know. This is these are all the one thing that I've learned about you, Elliot, and all the years that I've known you is, and everyone, you should understand this about Elliot. Criticism to Elliot is like a protein shake. Like he loves it. It helps sustain him. He adores it. And I think it makes him stronger. At least in his mind, it makes him stronger. But as we sit here right now, third in the Metropolitan are the New York Islanders, who've won four games in a row.
Yes.
Wild card two in the Eastern Conference. And don't blink because it might change. That's the way it happens. Briefly, it was Pittsburgh. Now it is the Detroit Red Wings by virtue of a 3-1 victory over the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday. I did mention the Pens held this thing briefly, blowing a 3-goal lead against Tampa on Saturday, but then they ended up winning.
That was one of the best games of the year, by the way.
It was so much fun.
Was one of the best games of the season.
And you know what's great about it? We've been talking so much about, like, you know, the B-list players that are doing a lot of the scoring for the Pittsburgh Penguins in this sort of comeback here. This was Crosby. This was Malkin with a pair. This is Letang. Like, Saturday's game against Tampa was, our stars are going to be better than your stars. That's the way it felt to me, anyhow.
One guy who I'm kind of happy for is Michael Bunting.
Scored the huge goal on Saturday, for sure.
And he also had a brilliant assist, an incredible assist earlier in that game. Bunting, you know, his first year in Toronto was such a marvelous season. His second year was a lot harder. You know, he became one of those players who gets marked for diving, right? Mm-hmm. And in this league, like Thomas Plekanec went through it. There's been other players who've been marked for diving before.
Tim Stützle going through it.
Tim Stützle is starting to go through it right now, where they just stop calling penalties against you, or you don't get the benefit of the doubt. And that happened with Bunting last year. And I remember there were some people who got upset at me, some Leaf fans, one of whom sent me a really passionate DM about it.
Oh my.
When I said that Bunting had reached a point where he kind of had to suck it up and just play through it, because he had a reputation and there was no other way for him to change it. And I remember, actually, I got a call from someone in the Leaf organization. I was like, oh God, this is going to be a lot of fun. And they actually thanked me for saying it, because they were trying to tell him that, and it just wasn't working. So, you know, it was really tough finish for him. He got a great contract. I'm happy to see guys get paid. But right not long after he got into Carolina, there was already this talk. I was starting to hear things like, he's going to get dealt. And I remember saying to someone, already? It's been 2 months. And I go, and I was being told it was just a bad fit. It didn't work. And so I was not surprised at all to see him get traded to Pittsburgh as part of the Gensel deal. It made perfect sense when I saw his name in it.
Of course.
And he's been a big reason as to why the Penguins have been rejuvenated. He's played really hard. He's been a really nice fit there. Obviously, Dubas thinks very highly of him, so it made sense that Dubas would go out and get him.
Greyhound life.
And it's really helped. In addition, and the other guy there who has been a huge part of this has been Nedeljkovic.
And oh, yeah.
Nedeljkovic is a really interesting guy because this is another one he played really well in Carolina and they let him go because they just didn't like what his arb case was going to be. So remember, they didn't qualify him and they let him go. And Nedeljkovic is a guy, Jeff, what thing does he have to battle?
Size.
Size matters. I always try to tell people size doesn't matter, but they don't listen to me, Jeff. And I get told size matters. Yeah. And that's the thing. He faces the size prejudice. But here, it's going to be a really interesting offseason in Pittsburgh in goal because around the deadline, Pittsburgh was looking to move one of their goalies. And they like the kid they've got in the American Hockey League, Blomqvist. Mm-hmm. That kid's going to play, I've heard. And you know, there were some rumors earlier in the year that Pittsburgh had something going with another team on Jari. It was denied to me, but other people telling me there's more there than I kind of knew or could uncover. But right now, you know, Nedeljkovic is a free agent, and I do think there were teams that called Pittsburgh about him at the deadline. But now, especially if they make the playoffs, how do you let this guy walk?
No, you can't.
Jari is a really talented guy, and he's a really good goalie, but he's always hurt. Like, the thing is, if you're going to be a true number one in this league, you've got to be dependable, right? And he just battles the injuries. But Nedeljkovic has been huge for them. He's another major reason they're back in the race. But again, he still faces that size prejudice. And I'm curious to see how Pittsburgh is going to handle all this.
So quick plug here for my blog. On Sunday, I was talking to Stan Narodka, our old buddy who still does a lot of work for NHL teams, a hockey researcher. Yep. And what he tracks every year is players and their performance post, like players that get traded in and around deadline and, you know, how well they do until the end of the season. So the cutoff date we put was 10 days before a trade deadline. So Sean Monahan didn't make it in. This isn't considered a trade deadline acquisition for these purposes. But 10 days out, in order, Jake Gensel is number one, 13 games, 20 points, 5 goals, 15 assists.
Yeah, he's been excellent.
This was as of
I'm curious to see what's going to happen there, too.
Oh, that's another interesting one.
He's been a perfect fit. And again, Carolina's history is not to pay what a 30-year-old would get on the market.
But to that point, though,
perfect fit. Perfect fit.
They broke their own protocols by acquiring him in the first place.
I think, to me, Jeff, and it's going to be interesting to see what the Hurricanes do with this. To me, that is an easier one to break than the long-term one or the long-term big money one. Because I look up and down Carolina's roster, and by the way, Carolina, they got Scott Morrow signed when the vultures were circling around him. One thing I didn't realize about Morrow, and he revealed it, I thought Morrow had another year before he could be a UFA, but he said when he signed with the Hurricanes that he was graduating this summer, so he could have gone UFA sooner. And the league knew that somehow. Like, there were teams circling around him, and Carolina had to battle to get him, and they did. And then on Sunday, they signed Bradley Nadeau, who's a really talented young player. They got him to come out after his freshman season at Maine. And it's believed they've got another one, Jackson Blake, who was a fourth rounder 3 years ago, coming too. So they've done a really nice job getting these guys to come out and commit to them. But the interesting thing is, if you take a look at their cap situation, they've got a lot of players that need to be signed this summer who still are not yet signed. So, you know, you take a look at it. There's Pesci and
Shea.
It's believed they offered Pesci 5x5 a year ago, and it didn't happen. And, you know, none of this stuff is done until it's done, okay? None of this stuff is done until it's done. But it seems unlikely that Pesci is going to stay. Shea, there's been times I heard he was going to sign. There's been times I heard they aren't going to get it done. I heard they offered him, they had a couple of unique offers to him, is what I heard. But at this point in time, it's still not done. And so we'll see. There's also Martinook. There's Teravainen. It's, you know, all these guys, like Teravainen's 29.
Jalen Chatfield, they've liked
Chatfield's
a lot,
an interesting one. Chatfield's an interesting one because I really like him as a player. That one's been on and off for the whole season. Like there were people who thought he was going to get extended before the year, and it's been off and it's been on. And I do think they legitimately want to keep him. But right now, you know, Teravainen's 29, Gensel's going to be 30, Martinook is 31, Shea is 30, Pesci's 29. You know, Chatfield's a bit younger, and also it's not as big a deal. Even a guy like Stefan Nason, who's done a really nice job there, he's 31. But you've got to think that's also not an earth-shattering deal. Plus, the other thing there is, I think they've also started to look towards next summer. Like Slavin is up after next year. Burns is up after next year. So it's not just them looking at, you know, who, and also there's Natchez, and I think that one's going to come to an end this summer. So it's interesting. They've got a lot of big decisions to make. I think they're doing the smart thing. Go for the Stanley Cup this year. Let the chips fall where they may. But, and I could be proven wrong on this, we'll see. I think it was easier and smarter for them to take the shot this year than I think it will be to give some term. Because the owner there, Dundon, he's a big probability guy. Very big probability guy. He weighs the probabilities. And the probabilities are that a lot, even though I think athletes do a better job of taking good care of themselves than they ever have, like Burns is a perfect example. He's 39 years old and he's still at the top of his game. I'd be very curious to see how he feels about long-term deals.
So you mentioned Bradley Nadeau a couple of seconds ago, and it's interesting. I had Don Waddell on the radio show on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I asked him about Nadeau because someone sent me a note saying it looks like this is going to get done. And so I just threw it out there to him. Is there anything on your first round pick from last year? And I mean, he was pretty forthcoming. He said, look, we'd love to sign him. It's he knows we'd like to sign him. It's going to be his decision. And then watching the Carolina-Columbus game on Sunday, Trip Tracy mentioned that a lot of the hard work on this one was done by Justin Williams to get him to come out, to get him to sign, all of that. So Trip went out of his way to mention that Justin Williams had done the heavy lift on getting Bradley Nadeau out. Anyway, circling back to what started this conversation, so number one, Elliot, as far as points go, is the aforementioned beginning of this discussion. That is Jake Gensel. Number two is Alex Nylander of the Columbus Blue Jackets. 19 games, 10 goals, 14 points. So happy for him. I mean, how many places has he bounced around since being a first round draft pick over the with the Buffalo Sabres? And then number three, and that's why we started this discussion in the first place, is Michael Bunting. 16 games, 5 goals, 8 assists, 13 points. So of all those players, to your point about how they're really happy with Bunting in Pittsburgh, yeah, they should be. Of all the players that got dealt, all the players that moved, change addresses, team sweaters, all of it, Bunting's in third. Then it's Vlad Tarasenko and Anthony Duclair to round to the top five. Anyhow.
Duclair, I'm very curious to see if Tampa's going to sign him. He's been a really nice fit there.
Sure has. I honestly see that guy as a fit in so many places. Don't you? Like, don't you look at Anthony Duclair and say this guy can fit everywhere?
Yes.
Like with that skill set and that speed and that ability to get zoned quickly and push back defense. Oh, yeah. Just about every team. Okay, so we have the Detroit Red Wings now in Wild Card 2. And the win over the Buffalo Sabres. It's 3-0.
Jumped on the Sabres to start and did not let go.
Did not let go.
Right, and from the beginning.
Right from the hop. And, you know, we had a couple of fights in this one. You know, Bo Byram catches Joe Valeno from behind / on the side.
Yeah.
Valeno gets up and confronts him. They talk. And then there's one of the more unlikely fights that no one would have predicted, but
the only thing is Byram makes me nervous because he's had the concussion history, right?
Which is why you have to say to yourself, like, because they had the discussion too, and I'm like,
yes,
I'm not so sure that Byram, okay, he's going to do this. Oh, geez. And then you just hope that he ends up being okay through all of it.
I'm not surprised in the least that Byram would be willing. I think that kid is, he's one of my favorite players in the league, Byram. I really like him. Yeah. But it, just because of his history, it makes me nervous.
The other thing that is noteworthy here is Patrick Kane scores. So the one thing we know about Patrick Kane is he loves torturing his former team. The Chicago
and
Blackhawks,
the Buffalo Sabres
and his hometown. That's the one things we know about Patrick Kane. And I can't help, but I'm not the only person to make this observation at all, but I'll just add my voice to the chorus. I always look at Patrick Kane and think about the veteran leadership change that they need with the Buffalo Sabres. And Patrick Kane is a kind of player that has the credibility to say in front of everybody, including the coaching staff, this is crap. No, we're not doing this. This is wrong. And that's one of the things I believe the Buffalo Sabres lack. That kind of veteran. That one that can say like, no, 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 no. This is not right. Like, we've talked a lot about how the Buffalo Sabres are going to, you know, do something with the veteran mix next year. And again, who knows if it's going to be Patrick Kane. If it's not Patrick Kane, someone like that. That has that gravitas that they can say, no, we're not doing that because it's stupid. I'm going to the Hockey Hall of Fame. I'm Patrick Kane. I know what works. That's the kind of guy they need. Mm. And watching him play the Buffalo Sabres, I'm thinking to myself, oh. And I'm sure Sabres fans are saying, how come we didn't get Patrick Kane? Again, it just reminds me that that's the type of guy, Elliot, that the Buffalo Sabres need. Anyhow, a thought on Detroit back in the mix here.
I thought Seider on Sunday was great. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I have a new nickname.
Uh-oh. Doodlebug. Oh, no, that's the race.
No. Doodlebug Derby. It's still there.
Okay.
I have a
Tappen
new
merchant.
No.
Oh, okay.
I have a new nickname for Alex Lyon.
Okay.
The Savior.
You'd be Savior in two places, though.
Last year... Florida. This year, Detroit. Yeah. What a massive game that is on Tuesday night. Detroit, Washington. Yeah. Massive. I mean, they're all massive games now, but that is a massive game on Tuesday night. Well, Detroit, Washington.
Especially after Washington left a point on the table, losing to the Ottawa Senators Sunday in overtime. A couple of things in that overtime. Ridly Gregg and Jake Sanderson using high ice in the offensive zone, passing it back and forth and circling past one another and dropping it. And then in one of the great screens that we've seen all season, and it's not just the screen, it's when Jake Sanderson let go of the shot. Brady Tkachuk just slowly coasts right in front of Charlie Lindgren. And the moment his eyes are taken away, Sanderson reads it and fires it. Connor McMichael is standing there like, what am I supposed to do? And the shot comes in and Lindgren has no chance. And he just floats it in. Anyhow.
Would you say that Lindgren was eclipsed?
Ooh, two eclipse references. It was the mass of Brady Tkachuk shutting out the sun. Although Jonas Korpisalo would have liked the sun to have been blocked out in that game.
That was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
And they're going to check this light here.
The lights are in my eyes.
Yep. Can't see. Saying, come on, fix this for me. I want to make sure it's not going to be shining on me all day long. There it is. I'll have to close the curtains as the fans still pile in to Capital One Arena here tonight, the Caps and the Senators.
I've never seen that before. But I always wonder about, like, you know, when you see, like, the when you see scenes from, like, European hockey at these rinks where they have, like, you know, one side is all windows. You always wonder about, like, you know, the sun and the glare and all these types of things.
But I immediately wondered if the Kraken could do it because... You know, they talk a lot about the natural nature of their arena, and it's a phenomenal arena. But I what this said to me is that the Capitals have blown an opportunity, and that they should be doing that to teams every game.
We're opening up the curtain to produce light in the
every afternoon game the Capitals playing. Ovechkin is teeing up on the one timer,
yeah,
they should be opening. Okay, oh, quick, open the drapes.
Oh, wow. So this is like the Phantom of the Opera. So like Ted Leonsis is like the Phantom of Capital One Arena. Is that what you're
there
saying?
There was, like, at the odd, where the Sabres played.
Yeah,
okay. I remember we did a piece on the closing of the odd. And one of the things that the players there told me, I think it was Rene Robert who told me this story. That there was whenever they played shooting at the Zamboni end, and I believe that was the second period. Mm-hmm. I think that was the second period where they shot at the Zamboni door. They had it set up where there would be a team employee there, mm-hmm. and they could rim the puck, and that mm-hmm. employee, if the employee kicked the door at the right time, the yeah. puck would bounce out. It was yeah. a set play.
You know who that was?
Who was that?
Porky Palmer. Porky Palmer was that guy. Longtime Sabres employee.
Look, I know you're the biggest nerd in the history of mankind.
This is Porky Palmer.
But there
Palmer,
is no
man.
Way you know that the name of the guy who did that.
His name is Porky
no
Palmer.
Way. He was and there's no way that person's name is Porky Palmer.
Minorly, his real first name is Ensel.
How many people listening to this podcast
Ensel
right
Porky
now
Palmer.
Believe this story is true?
It's a true story, dude. I'm not making this up. I don't joke about Porky
My
Palmer.
My story is believable. Merrick's is not.
No, our stories are exactly the same. Because Porky Palmer was a team employee. He was there for a long time. He used to be a mm-hmm. goaltender with Erie of the old Eastern League. Played a few games there. And this went right up to like the McGillney-LaFontaine years. Where, you know, there was one year where he probably should have been credited with like 8 assists. Because the Zamboni door, to your point, like you would throw a shoulder into it and it would jet out a little bit.
I heard it was a kick,
the goaltender would be going behind the net to play the puck. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, the puck would squirt out to the front of the net and it'd be there for a tap-in. Like there was one year, the guys told me that he should have had like 8 assists. Ensel Porky Palmer. Look it up, Freach. I'm not making it up, bro.
I'm not looking it up. I'm not looking. I believe
you.
Anyway.
Your love for me just got deeper and deeper that I knew the guy's name was Porky Palmer, didn't it?
Anyway, if the Capitals don't make the playoffs,
yeah,
it won't be because of anything they did on the ice. It will be because of their failure to use the sunlight to their advantage in more games this season.
Listen, but if they do...
Carberry is going to lose Coach of the Year votes because he didn't use this to his advantage earlier in the season. Weird as anything I've seen.
The power of
In the Minnesota game the other day against Winnipeg, there was a bird flying around the arena, I think.
I've seen that before.
Weird as this, yes.
So more day games and black curtains is what you're advocating to get the Capitals into the playoffs. Well... Listen, the Washington Capitals aren't doing themselves any favors. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about Philadelphia last podcast, and I don't want to do it again. But John Tortorella is talking about how we have to stay positive after they've lost their seventh game in a row, 6-2 to the Columbus Blue Jackets, who tied an NHL record. 6 goals, all scored by defensemen. That ties a record set by the Washington Capitals in 1992. Elliot.
I'm getting tired of talking about the Flyers and Tortorella because we've been doing it so much. I'll say this. I had people texting me after that game, this is all Tortorella's fault, or I think this is all crazy. Philly has done an incredible job being in this place. It's not over yet. They're definitely struggling. They're definitely struggling. That was a bad loss on Saturday. You cannot have that loss. You cannot. You can lose, but you can't lose like that. You look at that. First of all, they set a record, 6 goals by defensemen, or tied it anyway. But if you, and congratulations to Jack Greaves, who played really well, but you look at that roster should not be beating you 6-2 at this point in the season. And look, you know, people can break this down and talk about the coach and this, and he was very positive post-game. And the one thing I'll say is this. I have always believed myself that even if I don't like someone I work with, it is never acceptable to say, I can mail it in or I can be bad because I don't like that person. And I don't think the Flyers are doing that, but I was shocked at the amount of people who were coming up with that theory on Saturday night. Like, people are texting me, it's like the Flyers have quit. I said, don't bring that anywhere near me. I do not believe that. I think the goalie is exhausted in particular. I think I've told this story before. One of the biggest upsets in college basketball in the NCAA championship game was 1988, Kansas beat Oklahoma. At the time, Kansas set a record for most losses during the season while winning the NCAA title. And I once talked to Larry Brown, who was the coach of Kansas that year. And I asked him about, you know, preparing his team for that run, and they got healthy and winning that game. In the national championship, they played Oklahoma, a team that had beaten them twice during the year. And he said to them, don't be afraid to win. I said, what does that mean? And he said, you will be surprised. You can go on the journey. You can accomplish on the journey. And then when you get close to pulling it off, there's a moment there where you're like, holy bleep, we could actually do this. And some teams crumble under that. And some players crumble under that. And that was his saying, don't be afraid to win. And I think about the Flyers watching this right now. I think a lot of those players are exhausted. You know, Couturier's hurt right now. And there would be a lot of times when he'd be out there right now, they'd be looking at him, settle this down for us. And so I just see a team that has given everything, and it might finally be catching up to them. Like, I think it's really caught up to Ersin, but I don't think it's acceptable for anyone to say, they're not happy with the coach and what he's saying publicly, so they're giving up. First of all, I think that's an awful thing to be accused of. And secondly, let's just say for a second, Jeff, if it was true, myself, I would flog myself. I would flog myself if I allowed myself to feel that attitude was acceptable. You know, let's talk, for example, 5 minutes ago on this podcast, you are trying to convince me that Porky Palmer is a real person.
Correct.
In that moment, I hate you, but does that mean that I'm going to throw the pod and be terrible on the rest of the pod? No,
okay.
I am still going to try to be great on the pod. It is never a good enough excuse to say, I don't like this guy, so I'm doing a terrible job today. If anyone believes that's actually happening.
One quick follow up on Porky Palmer, and I made a mistake. Yeah. I made a mistake.
Oh my I'll admit God! It what now.
I said that he played for Erie.
Uh-huh.
He played in the old Eastern League for the Syracuse Blazers.
Are you sure it wasn't the Syracuse Canal Mules?
No, the legendary Canal Mules that we were part of the wonderful
shout out Megan Cahill from. That Syracuse.
That was so much fun.
And the good American on, Hockey League team. Great little video.
Syracuse Crunch for doing that as well. Oh, and the merch looks great. No, but he played for Syracuse in the Eastern League. My only question about, I'm going to have to research this, because Bob Costas broke in as a broadcaster for the Syracuse Blazers. Now, I think this was a little bit before Costas. I think Costas was there during their run in the early to mid 70s, and Porky Palmer, if that is indeed a real name, Jeff, played with them in 67-68. He also played one game for the Buffalo Bisons of the American Hockey League. Phil Watson. Oh, no way. Phil Watson was the former Rangers coach, the guy that used to go to war with Gump Worsley. He was the coach there. Wow. I had no idea about that one. Anyhow, Porky Palmer does actually.
I believe you. You know, one other thing with Edmonton here. So the cameras on Saturday night caught Corey Perry and Evander Kane.
Yeah.
And it looked like Perry was really unhappy about a giveaway that Kane had there. And well,
We've seen it with Leon Draisaitl and Evander Kane, and now we've seen it with Corey Perry Saturday in the Calgary game and Evander Kane.
Yes. And so I have a theory on this. Kane, so Edmonton has that awful game against Dallas, which is rock bottom for them. And then they come back with their best game of the year in beating Colorado, 6-2. That was their best performance top to bottom. And Kane breaks his schneid. First goals in 21 games. And then the next night he goes into Calgary and this happens in a really good game. So here's my theory. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Well, good, because you're going to hear it anyway.
Like, do I have a choice?
No. Okay. But I do want to give you the idea that you actually have a choice in these.
What if I said no? What would happen?
Well, and I tell you to get lost, and I just say it to the empty audience.
Keep walking until your hat floats, Merrick.
My theory is that the Oilers know if they're going to be successful in the playoffs, they need Evander Kane.
Of course.
They need him.
100%.
They need him. And they don't just need him to be moderately engaged. They need big pain in the ass Evander Kane. They need top four checker in the league, Evander Kane. And I think they've just decided that they are going to ride him until he gets there. It's going to be tough love.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be the coach who's going to do it. It's going to be the players who are going to do it. And they are saying, if we want to win the Stanley Cup this year, we need a great Evander Kane. And we are taking the responsibility of making sure he gets there. Because one thing about BX, he said, is that Perry doesn't do that a lot. So my theory, and I got a lot of theories.
You do.
But my theory is McDavid and Draisaitl have gone to Perry and said, we need your help with this. Because you, in addition to us, you also have the gravitas as a veteran player to go to him.
I'm about to sound like you now. Elliot, while I think a lot of your other theories are really dumb and miss the mark, I like that one. I like that one for each. I like that one.
And you know who else they're calling to get Kane to make sure that he is at the top of his game? Porky Palmer.
All you got to do, folks, is move your Zamboni doors to the corner. Listen to Porky Palmer, and the legend of Ensel Porky Palmer will tell you, put your Zamboni in the corner, loosen up the boards a little bit, and at the right time, you can get an assist in the NHL.
Oh, by the way, one other thing I just want to say, if people are not mad at me about the expanded playoffs. They're mad at me about my MVP takes. I do think the guy who's getting totally shafted in the MVP conversations is Panarin. Everybody's talking about McKinnon. He deserves it. Everybody's talking about Kucherov. He deserves it. Everybody's talking about Matthews. He deserves it. Everybody's talking about McDavid. He deserves it. Not enough people are talking about Panarin because he also deserves big push in this. One or two of these players are not going to be nominated and people are going to be lighting torches.
Yeah. There's another one that people aren't talking about enough.
Yossi?
Connor Hellebuck.
Hellebuck. Yeah, you know, Hellebuck's another good one too. He's another good one too. But I do think the guy who's getting the least amount of talk who deserves to be part of the conversation is Panarin.
You know how huge of a fan I am of Panera. No disagreement there. Let me circle back to a name we said about, I don't know, half an hour ago. And that's Brady Tkachuk. Okay,
yes.
So Brady Tkachuk with the great screen on the game-winning goal on Sunday against the Washington Capitals. Saturday, we found out that Brady Tkachuk is not really a big fan of players scoring empty net goals.
There is an incredible irony to all this.
Are you going to bring up Ridley Gregg and Morgan Rielly? Pause for 1 second, because after Nico Hischier had the nerve to caddy the goal into to escort the goal into the net.
Like, the thing is, too, is Gregg knew that someone was going to be coming for him. Nico Hischier was like, what? What's the big deal here?
Well, Brady Tkachuk went banana sandwich. Like, he was having that kind of game. Like, he was spicy. Like, 16 hits, you know, Chara has the record going back to 99 with 17, but like 16 hits. Now, by the way, just get a quick editorial here. I am like many of you. Whenever I see hit stats from the New York Islanders historically, I sort of raise a Spockian eyebrow about the whole thing. But we will say that Zdeno Chara, as reported, 1999 with the New York Islanders, had a game where he had 17 hits. Brady Tkachuk had 16 on Saturday night. He was a one-man wrecking ball, Elliot,
okay,
on Saturday.
I did have a watch the game nerds moment at the end of this.
Okay.
So we put out the tweet with the 16 hits. And immediately people came out of the woodwork with, well, that's bad because that means they didn't have the puck. Watch the game, nerds. And I'm not someone who likes to say this because I do think there are a lot of good numbers out there that really help you understand the game. But that was a watch the game nerds moment for me, because anybody who watched that game, look, they got embarrassed on Thursday night to Florida.
Yeah.
Tkachuk was miserable after the game, because not only did they get their ass kicked, but they got their ass kicked by his brother. So he knows he's going to hear from it all summer. Hey, Brady, remember that game we came to Ottawa at the end of the season? We beat you by 6 goals. So he's super miserable. He's not just miserable. He's double miserable. And he comes out on Saturday night. And I mean, you look at his stat line from that game. Okay. Yes, the 16 hits stands out, and I was agog when I saw that number. Yeah. But look at his overall line, okay? His overall line from that game, Brady Tkachuk played 20 minutes and 6 seconds. He had a goal. He had a penalty. He had 7 shots, 11 attempts, 16 hits, 2 giveaways, a takeaway, not a great night in the faceoff circle, 0-for-3. But that is not a guy who was chasing the game all night. He had 7 shots and 11 attempts and a goal. If you took out the hits, say he had 2 hits, you'd be saying, wow, what a monster. Just because he had 16 hits doesn't take away anything else that he did in that game. And like, so that was like, that was a whole watch the game nerds moment for me. Brady Tkachuk decided that night that because of the way they lost to Florida, everybody was getting hammered. He was taking no prisoners. And so like, that was a 16 hit game where it didn't feel like he was chasing all night. It felt like he was a wrecking ball who was not going to be denied. unfortunately, they still lost. Now, when it came to the thing with the empty net, one of the biggest problems in the world today is that it's not about right and wrong anymore. It's about who you support. So, look, Sens fans, okay, you're not going to like me right now. That's okay. There's a lot of people in the world who don't like me, okay?
Playing the role of Vancouver fans in Elliot's life right now will be Sens fans.
Yes, you're not going to like me. That's a long list of people. You join my wife, probably my son, my coworkers, my parents, my friends, and basically everyone I know.
And Porky Palmer, as you denied his existence.
And Porky Palmer, because I don't think this person really exists. And Merrick for bringing up his name on the podcast.
You're welcome.
You cannot torture yourself into false equivalencies. Either you have a problem with someone doing something into an empty net, or you don't.
No, you can't, no. You don't understand. No, no. It's 100% different.
No, you can't twist yourself into some crazy belief that Tkachuk is somehow better because he skated at him at full speed instead of cross-checking him. I'm sorry. You either have a problem with empty net goals or you don't. You don't get to rate them on a sliding scale of what is accessible, what is acceptable in an empty net or not. Either you like it or you don't. I know the Sens fans hate the Leaf fans, but on this one, you have to give the Leaf fans, you have to concede that that was a night where the Leaf fans could let you have it.
And they did, Elliot. And they did. A couple things quickly here to wrap up. I don't know.
By the way, on Ottawa, they made a couple changes off the ice on Saturday night.
Yep.
They let go of Rob Murphy and Jim Clark from their scouting staff. I don't know Rob Murphy really well, but I've met Jim Clark a few times. Him and Doug McLean, very tight from their days going back to Columbus. And Jim Clark, like, just a really nice guy. And there come times for change. I think we all understand, even in our business, Jeff, there's not a lot of security. You know, if your numbers go down, your ratings go down, whatever goes down, there's just times where you know it's coming. And Steve Staios is going to make changes in Ottawa. They have to get their own people in there. It's the circle of life, like the Lion King. I get it. Jim Clark, really super guy, and I hope he lands on his feet.
We wish them both well and that they find employment soon. How do you want to tackle this one? From the San Jose point of view or the St. Louis point of view? Because the St. Louis Blues just got swept by the San Jose Sharks this year. I'm really happy for William Eklund. First career hat trick. Looked great. Devin Cooley from Los Gatos.
Yes, that was a great story.
Wonderful. First career win. Congratulations there.
Dancing with the Shark. That was fantastic.
It was awesome. So I don't know if you want to handle this from the St. Louis point of view, where in that game, you know, Kevin Hayes and Torrey Krug were scratched. Or you want to handle it from, you know, I don't know. Which side do you want to handle this one from? The positive or the negative? Well, first,
it's been a really hard year in San Jose, a really hard year. And I think I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. Scott Gordon, who's the assistant coach there, who used to be the coach of the Islanders, David Quinn said that Gordon had a great quote that we're starting to make some teams and some fans mad. Mm-hmm. And nobody will be angrier at San Jose than St. Louis will be. And when Doug Armstrong and the Blues and whatever they do coaching wise look at the end of this season, they will look at those games against San Jose and say, boy, that's a reason that we're not going to the playoffs this year. I am going to be really curious of what St. Louis does in this offseason, because Doug Armstrong has really tried to do some things here. Remember a year ago, we tried the Krug for Sanheim that Krug vetoed, as is his right. But he has really been trying to do some things. And I'm curious to see what he's going to do behind the bench. And I'm curious to see what he's going to do with this team, because you can tell he wants to perform some surgery, and not minor surgery. We're not talking about like something small here, like a tummy tuck, or, you know, like something like that. We're talking about some major surgery.
That's replacing a limb.
Replacing a limb, something like that. Yes, he clearly has the itch to do something here, and Nashville won again on Sunday night. They've all but clinched the playoff berth, and you can't go winless against a team like San Jose and think you're going in the right direction. You just can't.
One good news story out of St. Louis, Jordan Binnington's had a really good year.
Yeah, he got really upset again, I saw, on Sunday night in the game against the Ducks. But Binnington has had a great year. He's been really good.
I had Woodley on the show last week, and he was just gushing about how everyone's overlooked this and how good Binnington's been. Like, he's got access to ClearSight Analytics, too. And he's like, Binnington, don't sleep on, like, he's like, Hellebuck should probably win the Vezina. Markstrom's going to be in the conversation. But he's like, Jordan Binnington's had a tremendous year. Tremendous.
So he's got a no trade clause that goes to a partial no trade. I think it's 2/3 of the league next year. Yeah. So his full no trade drops. And, you know, to me, I would be curious about what Armstrong will do here.
Wow.
If he'll go to Binnington and say, because he's got value. Now, you're not the same. This is one of those things where it's sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Because as promising as Hofer looks, you're not as good without Binnington. But it might be your best chance to get something. And before we wrap it up, what are you thinking in the Pacific Division? You think Edmonton catches?
I keep going back and forth on that because...
Vancouver?
Vancouver's got a huge one coming up against Vegas.
Yep.
That is an absolutely massive game. I think they have a shot at it. But then, like, there have been times, like, listen, the Vancouver Canucks aren't playing the best hockey that we've seen recently.
And they're not rushing back Demko.
And there is no hurry.
The earliest Demko plays is Saturday. The earliest.
I think there's a chance. I really do. I mean, I do wonder about at what point Edmonton starts to rest some players as well. But I think they have a shot.
See,
what do you think?
Here's the other thing. This is a dangerous game to play, which is why I like playing it. When I was 7, I used to like playing in the street because it was a dangerous game to play.
Elliot Frogger.
Who would you want to play?
Oh, don't play that. Oh, that is, teams have done it and it always blows up in your face. Look, you might want to say, oh, you'd rather play the Los Angeles Kings. They just doubled you up last night.
Vancouver's had big trouble with LA this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
but
I thought Vancouver actually played not bad. They didn't get a save. But I thought they actually played not bad. And we had this conversation with BX on Saturday night. The other thing, too, is it looks like the central winner right now is going to be the one seed. Vancouver may catch them. Right now it's Dallas. I don't think Edmonton's going to be able to catch Dallas, but Vancouver might. So we'll just say, for the purposes of argument, the central winner is going to be the one seed. Who would you rather play? And I asked Bieksa, because the other thing here is Nashville, that's a lot of travel. So when Vancouver went to the final in 2011, BX had talked about a lot of things on the show on Saturday night about how when they lost Ham Houston, they thought Tampa Bay was the better matchup. But some of his teammates told me when I wrote that big piece about them that one of the places where they really thought they lost was having to play a game six against the Predators, because it meant an extra long round trip halfway across, or more than halfway across the continent, from British Columbia to Tennessee.
I don't know. I still do whatever it takes to stay away from Vegas.
Weird stuff there. Logan Thompson got hurt.
I saw that in practice. Yeesh. In like a two-on-two drill.
Yeah.
I would still rather play Nashville than Vegas.
The other thing is you can't really plan it because these teams are all flipping around, right?
Yeah, Nashville may end up being wild card one.
Yeah.
I thought more you were going with if you're the Vancouver Canucks, would you rather face off against the Los Angeles Kings in the opening round?
I was kind of going there. Concede
the first spot in the Pacific.
Logan Thompson got hurt at practice, but Bruce Cassidy said that he thinks he's okay. Aiden Hill was at practice and is traveling with them, but won't be in the lineup, he said, Monday night. But you know who is traveling, Jeff, and will probably play?
Oh, yeah.
Thomas Hertl.
I can't wait. He's one of my favorite players on and off the ice. Vegas media, you just got a blessing. You just got a gift. He's a tremendous interview and a great character. And Vegas, the team, you just got an awesome hockey player and a versatile player, right? He'll start at the wing and then eventually make his way to the middle, we would suspect, right, Freach?
I would think so.
I want Vancouver to finish first, and I want Vancouver to face Vegas, and I want Mark Stone to be available for game one just to see the reaction. Because there are fewer, better, angry fans anywhere than Vancouver fans.
Why are you saying all this stuff when I'm going there? You couldn't have said this on Friday's podcast?
No, this is going to be wonderful. I would love to see that in the opening round. Wouldn't you love to see Vancouver take on Vegas in the opening round?
That's a Stanley Cup final.
Good. Give me it early while they're the healthiest. Awesome. That's great. Two amazing teams. Give me it. We've talked about this. I'm the opposite of how everyone else wants, like, the great teams to meet like in the third round. I don't, because they're all beaten up by then. I want the best teams at each other early. I just care about the quality of hockey. And I want that. I want those two teams to be at their absolute best. I don't want to be like.
People understand what I'm dealing with here. Do you listen to this podcast and say, all of a sudden, I understand why Elliot is his head all the time?
Elliot has a hard time embracing greatness. That's why. I just want hockey.
I don't know anything about greatness, so I have a hard time embracing it. Dom, do you, as the resident Vancouver Canuck expert on this podcast, what's your opinion? You want Vegas early or
Vegas first? Vegas. I agree with Jeff. Ooh. I don't like to admit it, but I agree with Jeff.
Yeah.
So I just want
shout out the way early.
I just want all the Canucks fans to know, the ones who always get mad at me, that when Vegas puts this on the bulletin board that the 32 Thoughts co-host and the producer want Vegas in the first round, if it doesn't go the Canucks way, this is not my fault. You cannot blame me for this.
We don't want Vegas because they're pushovers, Freeze. You want it because it's
no, a good matchup. I think you just said it's because they're pushovers. I quite honestly understood it that way. And I think most people will back me on this.
Yes. Welcome to it, Dom. Welcome to being on the air with Elliot.
You know, Jeff, just one thing. You know, Dallas, Carolina, Sunday night, huge game. The only good news for Colorado this weekend, Mikko Rantanen, not as seriously injured as it first looked, took two big hits from Matthias Ekholm on Friday night against Edmonton. The Oilers had an awful loss, maybe their worst performance of the season in Dallas on Wednesday, 5-0. They came back with their best performance of the season, 6-2 over Colorado on Friday before winning a tough game in Calgary on Saturday. The Avalanche lose that game, and then they lose at home 7-4 on Sunday to Dallas. Going to be the first time in 4 years that the Avalanche haven't won the Central Division. Dallas is 5 points up now as we head into the last couple weeks of the season. Rantanen, Jared Bednar confirmed what we reported on Saturday, that Rantanen was not as badly hurt as was initially feared and looked. He looked really wobbly on the ice as he left the game on Friday night, but he did travel home with them, and Bednar said on Sunday that he worked out on Saturday and skated by himself the morning before that Dallas game, so he'll be out a couple of days at least. Hopefully they're careful here. It's like, you know, we talk about Thatcher Demko. It's the Lou Lamoriello rule. If you've got time, use it. They have time. They're in the playoffs. Looks like they're locked in to play the Jets. Colorado, Winnipeg, 2-3. Just be careful with them. You've got time. By the way, that Dallas win, Peter DeBoer, he called it the biggest game of the season for the Stars. They dominated almost from the beginning. Georgiev, who, you know, it's always tough to tell with Twitter because you never know if Twitter is real or just you're getting the most vocal snapshot of Avalanche fans. But there definitely seem to be some Avalanche fans who wanted a Noonan to play against the Stars. But Georgiev saved them. They started out really terribly. They scored on their first shot. Dallas was all over them. That game looked like it was going to be a blowout for a while. But like I said, I really do think that Dallas, top to bottom, with Ottinger going, is the deepest team in the NHL. And they sure looked like that on Sunday night. They were in control, threatened a little bit, but generally in control. And I didn't think there were too many times in that game, even when Jonathan Drouin cut it to 5-4, that I was really worried that Dallas was going to lose. That was a big one for them as the balance of power shifts from Colorado to Texas in the Central Division.
Okay, Elliot, before we get to the Montana's thought line, something we probably should have mentioned last podcast, but we didn't get around to. You and Michael Grange wrote a really outstanding piece on the future of MLSE now that Keith Pelley has two hands on the steering wheel. What does this mean for MLSE? That is Rogers, that is Bell, that is Larry Tannenbaum.
Again, I've made sure to point this out everywhere, but Grange deserves the lion's share of the credit. He did a lot of the work. You know, Larry Tannenbaum has been a huge part of that organization for a long time. If you talk to a lot of people who worked there and a lot of people who played there, they will say, when they think about the human face of the ownership and the franchise, he will be that person. He's hosted a lot of events. He's had great relationships with a lot of the players. When a lot of things go wrong, he's the person that comes in and sort of solves it from the human end, because people like him and they trust him. But it looks like his time there is coming to an end. Because they have the contractual ability to open a window, and it's expected they will do it. He turns 80 next year, but it sounds like this is like a lengthy year-long process. Nobody knows exactly what it is, but it seems to be something like that. You know, I think fans always wonder, like, what does this stuff mean for us? There's a couple of things here. First of all, when Lou Lamoriello was GM and Brendan Shanahan hired him in 2015, one of the things I learned about Lamoriello is, look, he's the boss. He is the boss. He's not just a boss. He is the boss. It's like in Ghostbusters. I'm not a god. I'm the god. But the one thing that Lou Lamoriello always respected, and I have grown to understand this in my own life, is the chain of command. It's just respect. It's respect for the people you work with. And, you know, I do try to do this. I make a lot of decisions on my own, but if they have any repercussion on my family, I will always involve my wife in it, because God knows she's higher on the list than I am. And at work, you know, I'll say to the people who are my superiors, look, you may not be able to stop me, but this is what I'm thinking. And Lamorello is very much like that. You have given me the power to make these decisions, but I am telling you what we're thinking or what I'm thinking, so you will be prepared and understood. And Shanahan is like that. And even though he had the power over the last few years to speak to the board directly, he would involve the CEOs who were above him out of courtesy. Masai Ujiri was different, and there was a reason for that. Those of you who follow basketball and know the Raptors really well will remember a couple years ago, after he won the NBA title, he had a very public, very nasty contract dispute with MLSE, and specifically our employer, Ed Rogers. And I have said this many times, Jeff. The issue there was Mike Babcock. And that was that when Mike Babcock was fired as coach of the Maple Leafs with 4 years remaining on his contract, there were people there, and I don't even think it was just Ed Rogers. I think it was the Bell side of the equation too, that said, are you serious? We're going to be paying this guy this much money for this long to do nothing? This is the last time that is happening. And I don't think that anybody disagreed that Masai Ujiri was worth a lot of money. And since he won an NBA title with the Raptors, they should have basically given him a blank check. But I think even they balked at $14 to $15 million a year, whatever it is he makes. They just said, after what happened with Mike Babcock, we don't want to do this. This is not what we're going to be about. It's too much for one person. Now, I think they eventually got past that after the deal was signed. I think they worked at least mending their relationship. But Ujiri lost trust, and understandably so, and he dealt only with Tannenbaum. That's going to change now. Pelly has the power, and we know him. He will wield the power. And he will say, no, you guys are going to have to come through me. And if the Raptors are at starting a real rebuild now, and the Maple Leafs are trying to win, if they're successful, both sides, I don't think you're going to see a lot of change. But if they aren't successful, or if anyone here decides they don't like the new setup, then we are going to see change. So that's where a lot of this is going. You know, one thing that someone told me about MLSE is that because of what happened with Babcock, there was a time there where it was almost impossible to fire anyone with term on their contract. Like, they basically said, you're not doing this. Mm-hmm. And working for a telecom and understanding the way they think now, like, I came from CBC, which was public service, and I think there are a lot of really dumb and stupid misconceptions about the way the CBC runs their business. But they are not as cutthroat as the telecoms are. And when someone said to me that they basically had a rule, you couldn't fire anybody with term on their contract, I understood that, because I see the way that Bell and Rogers kind of do things. So it's going to be really interesting to see where all this goes. Shanahan's up in a year. Ujiri's up in 2 years. And, you know, we'll see how it all plays out. But there's no question it's going to be a different era. And Pelly, and Jeff, you and I have both worked for him. Mm-hmm. He puts you in a position to succeed. He will spend money. He will encourage you. But he will expect that with that comes success. And if there isn't, there are consequences.
You know, one of the most interesting parts of the piece, at least for me anyhow, was the discussion of the future of Larry Tannenbaum, and not to assume anything about Larry Tannenbaum. Do you have a thought on the future of Larry Tannenbaum through all this?
Well, I have a lot of respect for him. I am a huge fan, and we'll see where it goes. I've just learned over the years not to underestimate him, but they have the ability in their deal to open it up and buy him out. and we'll see what they do. I mean, like I said, this is a long process. This is a couple of years. Look, if there's anything we've learned, for example, with Arizona, these things never go in a straight line. As a matter of fact, they go in a line that starts straight, immediately hooks left, then goes right, then goes around in circles, then upside down. That's the way it goes.
Fascinating piece. Encourage all of you to read it. Available at sportsnet.ca. We'll hit pause. We come back with the Montana's Thought Line in a moment. Listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to the podcast. Time now for the Montana's Thought Line, Montana's Barbecue and Bar, Canada's home for barbecue. Thank you, Rick Turner. And Elliot, I understand you and the Hockey Night crew did that this weekend.
Yes, Yanni from Montana's, he came by the office on Saturday night. It was great to see him again. Nice. And he brought gifts. Basically, I don't think Santa delivers as much as at Christmas as Montana's delivered to the office on Saturday night. And the thing that was great was not only for us on air, but the crew was able to partake too. There was plenty of for them. And
excellent.
Some of the crew that bring their own meals and had Tupperware and stuff like that, they were taking home with them because there was plenty left over. Gus, who does the great job cutting our hair, he basically left with a Brinks truck full of Montanas. He got a box and he packed it as high as he could. So Montana's made a lot of people very happy on Saturday night, and the food was delicious. And let me just add, not a pecan salad to be found, which made it even better.
Disappointing, but nonetheless, glad to hear all of this. And here's the follow-up question I have for you. And maybe the answer is you, Elliot. I don't know. Who of all the people at Hockey Night on Saturday had to count their fingers afterwards for fear they may have chewed one off?
I watching BX eat, I'm not sure he'll be able to drive a car.
May have chewed off a couple of digits in the process?
Yes, and I'll say this too. They brought ribs, but they didn't just bring ribs. The mac and cheese was incredible. The poutine was incredible. The mini donuts for dessert were incredible. I know that I am really pimping a sponsor here, and unusually hard for myself, but credit where credit is due. The food was great.
That's great. It's awesome. All right. To that, we get to the questions. The way to get in, as always, 32thoughts at sportsnet.ca, 1-833-311-3232. Kind of starting off with a little bit of a bizarre one here, but let's let this one rip. Scott,
this whole
from
segment
New York
is
City.
Bizarre sometimes, so that it gets fits sometimes. Perfectly.
Well, here's a weird one. Listening to 32 Thoughts on the morning of April 5th, and what do you know? An earthquake. The epicenter was New Jersey, but we sure felt it here in Queens. Thankfully, not big enough to cause any serious damage. They absolutely felt the quake over at Madison Square Garden, where the ice is on the fifth floor, so you must already know what question I'm going to ask. If there were to be an earthquake during an NHL game and the quake caused the puck to go into the goal, would the goal be waved off? I imagine that this could have real implications, especially for the LA Kings. Additionally, has there ever been an NHL game impacted by an earthquake or another natural disaster? I've seen them being postponed due to incoming storms. I've seen them affected by issues at the arena, usually electrical. I've just never heard of one that had an unexpected disaster mid-game. Love the pod. Thanks for everything. Obligatory barbecue shout-out to Pig Beach in Astoria, New York. I know you like your barbecue shout-outs, Elliot. So Pig Beach in Astoria,
I do.
New York.
Okay. All right.
So a couple of things here. Whenever I think natural disaster game, I always think about the Avalanche versus the Hurricanes, waiting for that to be a Stanley Cup final. Thank you very much. Maybe it happens this year and it'll be branded as the natural disaster Stanley Cup final. This just happened. Did you know this? in March 31st, Laval playing at Rockford, there was a tornado and players went to the dressing rooms and the fans all gathered in the hallways. Now, it didn't cancel the game. The players went out and played and the fans were able to go back. But we came this close not too long ago, Elliot, to having a tornado shut down a game or impact a game more so than just the players being ushered back to the dressing rooms and fans being sheltered in the hallways. But whenever I think about things like this,
I didn't know that.
1968 comes, March 31st. 1968, okay, so the first year, post the first expansion year, essentially, in the NHL, at the Spectrum in Philadelphia, during a performance of the Ice Capades, part of the roof blew off the Spectrum. Now, the Flyers, for the remainder of the season, had to play home games in other venues, in other markets. Hmm. So they played at least one home game in Toronto against the Boston Bruins. They played a bunch of games as well at Le Colisée in Quebec City. So it has happened that it's impacted NHL games, Elliot, but those are the ones that come to mind. There was one most recently at Rockford.
All right. Now, first of all, I have to say, I've never considered the possibility that an earthquake would score a goal and what would happen. I just don't have a good answer for that scenario. The other one you can mention
in the official's casebook anywhere, Elliot? I don't know if you're like natural disaster goals.
There are some things that I bet are not in the official casebook, and that would be one of them. But look, NHL, get on it. There should be a ruling so that if it ever happens, we know.
Yeah, you're prepared.
But
you're
the ready. Other one I remember, Jeff, was 1988 Stanley Cup Final, Bruins, oh, Oilers, yeah. Game 4. The Oilers are winning the series 3-0. They could win the Stanley Cup that night. And late in the second period of a 3-3 game, the power failure. And they could not get the power back on at the Boston Garden. So they packed up, they suspended the game or canceled the game, and they went to Edmonton. And the good news for the Oilers fans was when they won the Stanley Cup in a sweep, winning game 6-3, they got to celebrate and win it on home ice. So that's the closest thing I can think of at the NHL level where a big game had something like that happen to it and how the league handled it. They packed up and they moved back to Edmonton. You know, another one I remember just for the pure emotion of the situation, it's very different. In the aftermath of September 11th, 2001, the Rangers and the Flyers played an exhibition game. And I think it was after the second period, President Bush went to speak. So all the players and the fans watched it on the Jumbotron and they just decided they weren't going to play the rest of the game. That's very different, but I always remember that moment just because of the momentous nature of the world at the time.
But as far as earthquakes nudging round black discs over red lines,
don't know that one.
All right. Jake in Victoria submits this one. Hey, guys, my question is, if Vegas were to have Mark Stone play one or two games on a conditioning stint in the AHL at the end of the year around game 82 in order to prepare for the playoffs, would his cap affect the team's overall cap? And how would other teams react to this?
It would be, first of all, I personally would have no issue if Mark Stone did a conditioning stint in Henderson for the Silver Knights of the American Hockey League. There's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly normal for a player who's missed a serious amount of time to go and do a conditioning stint if they want to. Yes, I'm sure people will scream bloody murder because that's just the way everything is. But I don't have an issue with it, and it would not affect their cap situation. It's perfectly normal. Put it this way, if Matt Murray was to get cleared, Toronto would do the same thing.
Okay, Elliot, this one comes to us from Jason. Jeff, I got a beauty for you. I actually think Elliot might like this one too. Okay, we'll see.
I'll decide if I like it or not.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what you think here. On Thursday night, Ottawa 67 defenseman Sam Mayer scored the overtime winner in a thrilling 6-5 game to put the 67s ahead 3-1 in their playoff series against the Bulldogs. This is OHL, by the way, folks. The overtime goal not only capped off a hat trick, but Mayer also had an assist and a fight in the game, giving him the Gordie Howe hat trick as well. This got me thinking a few things. Has any NHLer ever had a hat trick and a Gordie Howe hat trick in the same game? If so, have any defensemen done it? For the trivia cherry on top, has any NHLer ever had a Gordie Howe hat trick and a hat trick with the third goal coming as the game winner in overtime? Wow. Quite an amazing game from Mayer in the playoffs, no less. Thanks, fellas. Jason, who describes himself as a suffering Sens fan living in the hellscape of Leafs land. Okay. Paints quite a picture there. So, has this ever happened in the NHL before?
It's a great question. A lot of stipulations, but a great question. Yep. Merrick,
only about,
I assume you have
40,
done the research here.
44 times. So it's, and it has
44 times?
44 times. I just put the filters on right now. Yeah, 44 times.
So 44 times a hat trick and a Gordie Howe hat trick?
44 times. Yes, correct.
I never would have guessed it was that much. That's incredible.
To the question about has a defenseman ever done it? Yes, Paul Coffey did it 1985 against the Los Angeles Kings. 3 goals, 2 assists for 5 points and 15 penalty minutes in that game as well. So it has happened where this has happened with defensemen. Not sure about game-winning goals here. But there's a couple of really interesting names, like some that you actually look at that. Paul Coffey did it twice. Oh, wow. Paul
I'm not Coffey surprised. Coffey, twice. Tough player, man. Tough player.
Yeah, he was not shy. Jean Beliveau did it 3 times, of course. Le Gros Bill, one of my favorites. Here's one for you.
Did you know one story? I've mentioned this before. You know, one story I've heard about Jean Beliveau is he didn't want the Lady Bing named after him. I heard there's a story. Where the league once talked to Jean Beliveau about having the Lady Bing trophy named after him in his honor. And he was like, nah, I'm a tougher player than that.
To that point, first of all, thanks for bringing that up. This is one of the things that I've always tried to point out about Jean Beliveau. Now, was Jean Beliveau a very steady, the way he carried himself, very stately and gentlemanly?
100%.
Absolutely. Like when you think of like the title of gentleman, to me, there's Jean Beliveau. There's not even a number two. Everybody is fighting for number three. Like that's how I think of Jean Beliveau and the word gentleman in the history of hockey. But having said that, if you look at his early years with the Montreal Canadiens, he was nasty and he was tough. Like, let's not forget here, he was, in a lot of ways, when you looked at, like, when Beliveau started with Montreal Canadiens, the thing was, wow, we've never seen someone that big skate like that. He kind of was Lindros before Lindros, in a lot of ways. And he was nasty. And he was rough. I think he led the Habs in penalty minutes, like, the first 3 years of his career. We think of him now as, you know, one of the greatest players of all time, and cup-winning goals, and the gentleman, and so super strong, like, all those things. We tend to forget that, like, there was some nastiness and some, you know, some pretty, you know, rough play, dirty play from Jean Beliveau. Certainly when he started. Yes, he was.
He was no shrink.
We never
no
talk about
violent.
That. He totally was. So that
and
story
say
does
that
not
with
surprise me
total
at all.
Respect.
Totally.
You know, I love that. I heard that story about Beliveau, I think about a year or two ago.
I believe
ago.
It.
I'm not sure if I've ever told it on the pod before, but.
No,
I think it's hilarious that, and I'm willing it to be true. I you know, obviously there's no way of verifying it, but I'm willing it to be true that he said, I don't want any part of the Lady Bing trophy.
Okay, let me drill down on this a little bit more. So there are 4 players that are tied with 6 points while getting a hat trick and a Gordie Howe hat trick. I'm not going to ask you to guess because we'll be here all day. They are. That,
yeah, I've had some good guesses lately, but.
You're not getting these.
Well, I'm trying to think of who's had 6 points in a game. Well, you know what? Would Daryl Sittler be one?
Well, Daryl Sittler is one.
Because he was a tough player. He would fight.
No, Daryl Sittler.
Lanny McDonald doesn't surprise me. Another tough guy.
Lanny McDonald is there, absolutely, but he didn't have the 6 points.
Rick Tocchet?
Rick Tocchet, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, is not on this list. Brendan Shanahan.
Okay, I'm going to run down the list
just
more
to keep it spicy. All right.
Well, let me just try one more. Oh, Shanahan, I should have guessed him. Kevin Stevens
is not on the list either.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, Dom, erase this part. This is not as good as my guesses from several weeks ago. yeah. Okay, you know what?
Okay,
just
so,
do it.
Hang on.
Run through the list.
Okay, here are the players tied with 6 points. Aurel Joliat of the Montreal Canadiens, okay. Dennis Mrook of the Washington Capitals, Stan Mikita of the Chicago Blackhawks,
yep.
Kirk Muller of the New Jersey Devils. Mm. Now, I'm going to read the remainder of the complete list here. Some big names.
44 guys.
Here we go. I'm going to take a big deep breath, okay. Elliot. Here we go.
Yep.
Jeremy Roenick, Jonathan Chichu, Steve Yzerman. I mentioned Paul Coffey, Bobby Clark, Joe Thornton, Paul Kariya, Eric Lindros, did it a couple of times, Keith Tkachuk, Gary Unger, Perry Turnbull, Walt Tkachuk, Brian Sutter, Blaine Stoughton, Marian Stastny, as we all predicted. I mentioned Brendan Shanahan, Bernie Nichols, John McKenzie, Lanny McDonald, you mentioned, Rick Martin, Bill Thomas, Pierre LaRouche, Steve Larmer, Brian Lawton, Mark Hunter, maybe soon to be general manager coming to a franchise near you, Dave Hannon, Dirk Graham, Ted Kennedy, Theo Fleury, Phil Esposito, Bill Derlego, one of the more underrated players ever, Mel Bridgman, Mike Corrigan, I mentioned Jean Beliveau, and Marcel Bonin. Those are your 44.
Wow.
Some of them did it multiple times.
Good names.
That was a fun question. Thank goodness the NHL does those filters on their website. Bless you, NHL. here's one from Justin in Denver. He wants to know if either of you have any good stories about random equipment or stuff players have hung on to for years and years, refusing to upgrade.
Shanahan's shoulder pads were one.
So there's a couple. So I think Shanahan
Crosby's
and
jock.
Chris Chelios.
Didn't Colby tell a story about Crosby's jock?
Oh, it's legendary. He used the same jock going back to when he played Rimouski in the QMJHL. Let me circle back to your point about Shanahan.
I just want to say I've never really looked at it. I would like that to be on the record. Thank you.
We should throw Phil Kessel's jock into that as well, because apparently he had one that goes back to when he played, I don't know, Pee Wee or something, and old shoulder pads as well. But I'm telling that what I was told is Phil Kessel's jock, as far as age, rivals Sidney Crosby's. Just put it out there. As Doug McLean once said and often said, I'm not saying it's the truth, I'm just saying what I heard. But the Shanahan's shoulder pads, those were the Sherwood 5030s. I think of also Chris Chelios, who wore those, I think, all the way to the end, and Dustin Byfuglien did as well. So I think you're bang on about those shoulder pads. Butch Goring's helmet Spaps, which is a Swedish brand of helmet that he wore when he was 12 years old and wore his entire career through the NHL. And then, Elliot, how can we let that question go without mentioning Craig Ludwig's shin pads?
Oh, yeah. Greg, that's a great call, too. Gretzky's helmet also took a lot of criticism late in his career, but he still wore it.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone.
Ludwig's shin pads is a good one, too. Really good.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, I think, has something that they have a hard time parting with. Whether it's a piece of gear that's just worn out and trainers have to keep stitching it together, whether it is like the aforementioned Crosby or Kessel jock or shoulder pads that, you know, you got in your, I don't know, NHL draft year when you were 17 and you can't part with. I think I would imagine that most players have something like that in their their hockey bag, which is, by the way, I think a great show waiting to happen. What's in your hockey bag? Maybe just for equipment geeks like me. Okay, let me get to one more here. This is right up your alley. Andrew in Toronto. Hi, Jeff and Elliot. Day one listener here. Bless you, Andrew. We've bored you for a long time. I was listening to Friday's episode and have to say I disagree with the backtracking on the term turtle derby in favor of doodlebug derby because they move backwards. Moving backwards imply these teams are losing points, which is impossible. These teams are still moving forward, however slowly. I implore you to reconsider. Okay, so that's the editorial part of the email. Now on to my question.
I will say this. A scientist was the person who disputed this. So
okay,
you have to trust science. Trust the science.
Trust the science.
But fair comment. Fair comment, but that's it.
In the era of the death of expertise, please trust the science. Yes. I was wondering if you could explain to me why the NHL uses AAV to calculate cap hit instead of actual salary. Once upon a time, it made sense to me, but now I'm not sure I understand the rationale, especially now that there are rules about how much salary can fluctuate from year to year. Is there any appetite from players or teams to change this? Elliot, thank you, Andrew.
I don't know if there's any desire to change that, but the answer is pretty simple. The NHL didn't want front load or back loading. They wanted consistency. For example, one of the decisions I've disagreed with the most over the last 20 years was that Vancouver got a penalty for Luongo. That contract was approved and there should have been no problem with it. Once a contract is approved, it's ridiculous that they should have to pay a penalty for it after he can no longer play and retires. I thought it then and I think it now. But the NHL didn't want those back diving contracts. They want, or front diving contracts, whatever you want to call them. They just wanted consistency across the board, and they did not allow you to base it on the salary per year. That was part of when the salary cap was built into over 2004 and 5, that was one of the bedrock principles. There is a story I was told that when they changed the CBA or did a new CBA in 2013, there was, for whatever reason, one team that thought that had changed, and they negotiated a deal and submitted to the league and explained, we're doing it this because of this year, and we want the cap hit this year and that year. And the league was like, you know, we didn't change that. And the manager was like, whoops, like, I thought for some reason it had changed. And they kind of all laughed about it. And the same deal got done. Like, they never, I heard they didn't change the contract, but for some reason, someone had thought it had changed, but it never has. And I don't expect it to. Maybe it will, but I've never heard any real talk about that.
Gotcha. All right, Andrew, thanks for that one. And again, it's the Montana's Thought Line, Montana's Barbecue and Bar, Canada's home for barbecue. We'll be right back. Before we get back to our regular programming, we need to talk about our partner, Montana's Barbecue and Bar.
Taco Bout? Really?
That's right. With $5 tacos available every Tuesday, satisfy any taco craving when you try their seasoned grilled chicken, Mexi spiced beef, kapow shrimp, or mixed veggie options.
Mix and match to try them all or add one to the side of your favorite Montana's item. $5 tacos at Montana's Barbecue and Bar every Tuesday. Some conditions apply. Visit montanas.ca for details.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
A Okay, welcome back to the podcast, 32 Thoughts, presented by the GMC Sierra Elevation, and I am stepping way out of my knowledge bounds here on this one, but I know you have some strong thoughts and maybe a way to tie it into hockey about the Iowa-UConn illegal screen in the final seconds controversy, Elliot.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this because I think there's a hockey comparable.
Okay.
So for those of you who didn't see this, Caitlin Clark, I was watching on Friday night as Iowa played UConn in the women's Final Four, and it was a great game. And basically what happened was Iowa was in control, and they almost lost control. And one of the things that bailed them out at the end of the game was an illegal screen called against UConn, which basically allowed Iowa to escape with just a couple of seconds left. And there was a huge debate about, was this call acceptable?
A trip to the title game on the line. Mule, the drive, 5 seconds left. Looking for Beckers and an offensive foul. An offensive foul on Edwards with 3.9 to go.
And in the moment, most people seem to think, terrible call. And then the next day, and when some people saw some replays, they kind of walked it back a bit. And first of all, I don't like it when people look at this stuff in super slow-mo, because it creates a bias, right? It doesn't really look the way. And also, the referees are making these calls in real time, right? Like, that's not a reviewable call. You're making that call in real time. Now, I hated the call, and I was thinking about it from a hockey point of view. First of all, You never see that kind of call made at the end of a game. To me, it's all about consistency. And this is what the NHL players freak out about. They hate it when something like that late in a game, if that was game 7 of the Stanley Cup final or game 6 or whatever of a playoff series, where I think players freak out is you haven't made that call all game or all year, and you're making that call now. The first ever playoff series the Toronto Raptors won was against the New York Knicks. And in game 5, and back then those were best of 5, so that was the deciding game. I think the Knicks got called twice for illegal offense. There's an illegal offense in the NBA, or at least there was. I don't know if there is now. And I remember after that game, some of the Knicks players were like, illegal offense? Are you freaking kidding me? You never see that call. And so when I used to play a lot of pickup, I was the king of illegal screens. Nobody was better in pickup basketball at throwing illegal screens than I was. And was that illegal? Yeah. Was it super blatant? I didn't think so. I've seen worse screens than that. But I always try to think of these in a hockey context. And if I was a player, I would despise that call because you didn't see that call all game. All game, you didn't see that call. And so when you're watching a playoff game and people say, well, if it's a penalty in the first minute, it's a penalty in the 49th minute. Fine. But establish that it's a penalty in the first minute or the second minute. That's what drove me crazy about that call. Because unless the offending player basically tackles the defender, which didn't happen, you can't make that call out of nowhere in a vacuum. And that is something I know that makes players crazy. You cannot suddenly call something in a moment that's not supremely blatant without calling it all game.
There were people, to draw this into hockey, there were people who warned that this is where hockey was going to go in 1998. And do you know what happened in 1998?
I turned 28 years old.
That was very important, certainly. And a close second to your birthday and turning 28 was the NHL went to the two referee system. And I think the problem, and we've been arguing about this ever since. Like, if you talk to the old timers, they'll keep telling you about, you know, an official's got a feel for the game. And listen, I understand why there's two officials. It's a hard game to call. You need two officials out there. You really do. It's tough, to say nothing about how quickly the game moves and how you have to be in a certain amount of shape. And the NHL has lost a lot of institutional knowledge because, you know, the older guys just can't keep up anymore, but they have all this knowledge about calling a game, and now they're handing the game over to younger officials that don't have the volume of games under their belt. And you see where I'm going here. Just when you start to get that institutional experience and understanding, you age out because you can't keep up with the game anymore, and it keeps on getting younger and younger. It's a real concern. I think that's where a lot of the frustration comes from. But in 1998, the NHL went to the two-referee system, or as I like to call it, the two-person system. Because these aren't two referees that are the same. These are two people. You see things different than I do. I see things different than Dom does. Everybody listening to this podcast right now sees things differently. And in 1998, when they went to the two-referee system, there were those that said, that's the end of consistent calls in the NHL, because it has to be, because no one sees the infractions the same. In the olden days, talk to the old timers, there was a consistency about the calls. Now, was there bias? You know, yeah. And some of those were pretty clear for some officials and some teams. But by and large, like, how many times have you talked to an old timer, Elliot, and they talked about the relationship they had with the official and they knew how the official called the game? Now there's two.
Yep.
Now there's two. And I think it's something that we don't talk about a lot because we want to assume that referees are machines or referees are robots, but they're not. And as much as they're trained the same way and they go to the same camps as Stephen Walkham runs every single year, and as much as they read the same rule book and study the same case book, there's still two different people asked to make calls on a game that's going incredibly fast. I even think there won't be even consistency the way the game is played right now with if they go back to the one referee system, let alone two. I think the problem is we want consistency where baked into the pie right now, you have two people making calls and no two people are going to call the exact same game. And the sooner we understand that, I would hope the better off we would be. That's what I think.
Good sermonette.
Thanks. Here endeth the lesson. I feel like Sean Connery in The Untouchables all of a sudden. That's what I think. I always, when I start to hear about consistency of calls, I say to myself, how? You have two different people making calls. You're not going to get consistency. I'm sorry. If you want to have officials to be able to keep up and just try to have some modicum of consistency or just resemblance of consistency or just, you know, whisper, have a nodding acquaintance with consistency. This is the way you do it. But expecting consistency in all three periods when there are two people making calls, good luck.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously. It doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.